started with the check and see who is on the phone with us this morning. Susan Stewart?
Yes, I'm here.
James Groft?
Yes.
Colleen Savold?
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Jim Adkins? David LaFuria?
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Jeff Decker and Clyde Gross?
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anyone else on the line? That is that Jim Adkins? I heard Swiftel. I didn't hear who it was.
It's Jim Adkins, Swiftel.
Okay, when you're on with us, you're going to have to speak up. We're having a pretty difficult time. You're breaking up a bit.
Okay. I'm coming into Pura. I'm calling out wireless. I'll just put it on.
It's no reflection on Swiftel, I'm sure.
I'm sure I'm not using the Swiftel network.
okay. Well, good morning to everyone. This is the time and place for the Public Utilities Commission meeting, Tuesday, December 6, 2005 at 9:30 a.m. We're in the State Capitol Building in room 468, Pierce, South Dakota. My name is Gary Hansen. With me today is Bob Saar and Dusty Johnson. We're all commissioners, by the way. We will not be having approval of the minutes this morning because our email has been down for some time. Consumer reports. Deb Gregg.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. The Commission has received a total of 1,674 consumer contacts during 2005. 203 of these contacts have been received since the last report was prepared for the November 1st, 2005 Commission meeting. 45 of the contacts for this period include telecommunication services. 59 of the contacts involved electrical services. 25 contacts involved natural gas services, and there was one contact involving gas and electric services. 27 contacts involved cellular phone service, and there were 20 contacts that were related to the do not call, and 26 contacts involved issues not regulated by the PUC. And 1,352 of the 1,674 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved, and 2,126 of the 2,371 contacts received in 2004 have been resolved. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Deb. Listening to the number of every time we have a meeting, we listen to those numbers, there's a lot of complaints. Can you tell us just a little bit of how long some of those are? You said ought four, and most of them sound like they're resolved and ought four. How far do those usually carry over?
Sometimes they take a couple months to resolve if there's cellular issues or the do not call registry, sometimes to track down phone numbers and why people are calling. Sometimes it takes a letter from them to provide us that information.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Natural gas, NG05.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, yes.
Sorry to interrupt that. I just thought it was worth mentioning the incredible work Deb Gregg, her staff, and other members of the commission have done in the last week and responding to a pretty high volume of calls we've had about the power outages last week. And Deb, thank you very much. I know we were staffing on Saturday and Sunday, which is not usual for the commission, but I thought that was very responsible that you all responded to obviously a need for that people wanted information, and we were there to provide it for them. Thank you.
Very appropriate remarks, Commissioner Johnson. Thank you for reminding us of that. Natural gas, NG05-014, in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corporation doing business as Northwestern Energy for approval of tariff revisions. The question before us today is, shall the commission approve the tariff revisions? And it looks like it's going to be a pretty tough hearing this morning.
That was the first time.
So very first time we've had
body armor today.
Is your mic on?
I think so.
Okay. Our very first opportunity. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Pam Bondry with Northwestern Energy out of Sioux Falls. Today we have before you a natural gas tariff filing to essentially do some cleanup work on formal references to the corporation as its new name and the Northwestern Energy, and also to change how we do some cash out balancing on our transportation issues. Since I've been with the company now a total of about 2.5 weeks, I have on the phone with me Mr. Clyde Gross, who's our manager of gas management services, and Jeff Decker, who is one of our regulatory analysts out of Huron, and they will do the more formal presentation on the tariff filing for your decision today. So, with your permission, I'll turn it over to Clyde and Jeff in Huron.
Thank you, Pam. Jeff and Clyde?
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Clyde Gross. The tariff changes we have in front of you are to get Northwestern's natural gas transportation tariff and some other items up to the current world we're living in. We had a monthly cash out in our transportation tariff. With the wild swings in the natural gas world, we felt the need for a daily cash out, which Mid-America has had in place for almost 3 years. There's been some other minor changes of cleanup language. Other than that, the changes are pretty much to get the transportation tariff up to current. The one item that I'd like to, you know, subject to, your approval, we asked for a December 1 date. With all the telecommunication issues and problems we're having getting data from our transport customers, we're asking for that date to be pushed to January 1 instead of December 1. I'll turn it over to Jeff and see if he has anything to add.
Yeah, no, I think Clyde's covered it well. There's not a lot of changes. The cash out's the main thing, and again, just because of the storms and all the weather issues and towers down, we're struggling to get information that normally comes easily, so it would be more fair to go with other marketers on our system if we could just move that to January 1.
Thank you. Anything further? Dave?
Thank you, Commissioner. The changes, as was stated, basically follow along with Mid-American's tariffs, been in effect quite some time. The customers subject to this rate, other than Northwestern's affiliate, are only one, is Otter Tail Energy Services Company. And I have been in contact with them, and they not only have no objection, but they request approval of these changes so that Northwestern's tariff is easy to follow, is similar to Mid-American's, and so there's only really one tariff for them to follow along. So they request approval of the tariff. Right. And Commission staff would also recommend approval.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions by the commissioners? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Commission approve the tariff revisions given the change of a January 1 rather than December 1 start date.
I will second.
And I concur.
Thank you.
Item number 2, NG05-015, in the matter of the filing by Mid-American Energy Company for approval of tariff revisions. Today the question is, shall the Commission approve the tariff revisions? Is Mid-American here?
Yes, Your Honor, this is Susan Stewart from Mid-American. There's really two very minor changes made by this tariff. One is we're removing references to certified natural, competitive natural gas provider and replacing that with pool operator to more closely align the language with the terms we use in South Dakota. And there's a reference in the tariff to providing notice last year of an intent to become a transportation customer. We're modifying that so that that notice has to be given more precisely within the prior 12 months instead of last year.
Thank you. Bob?
The only thing that I have to add to that, I guess, is the notice for the 12-month period would be consistent with their current pipeline demand rider number 2 tariff. So it's consistent with that other gas transportation tariff. And they also would want to request the effective date of December 1st of 2005. So staff would recommend approval of those minor changes. And the reason for the certified national gas provider, staff recommend that they take that out of their tariff since this only applies to Iowa.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions by the commissioners? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the commission approve the tariff revisions.
I will second.
I concur.
Telecommunications, TC 05-1, in the matter of the application of Transnational Communications International Incorporated for a certificate of authority to provide local exchange services in South Dakota. Today, the question is, shall the Commission grant the COA to Transnational Communications International Incorporated? Does Transnational have anything to present at this time? Staff have anything for us?
Yes, thank you.
Chairman Hansen. This is Harlan Best with Commission staff. Transnational Communications International, Inc. filed on May 4 as a reseller of Local Exchange Service. No interventions were filed. The company proposes to offer local services via resale of Quest Corporation to business customers. Company does not presently plan to offer services to residential customers within the state of South Dakota. Transnational filed in accordance with the Commission's administrative rules. The company was granted an inter-exchange certificate of authority in February of 2000 with restrictions. In this application, the local authority the company is requesting does not include advance payments or deposits, and they will bill their local services in arrears. Staff recommends the Commission approve the application for local service in Quest Corporation territory with rural safeguards and approve the tariffs as revised.
Thank you, Harlan. Are there any questions by the commissioners? I will move then that the Commission grant the certificate of authority according to the briefing by the staff.
Second. And I concur.
TC05-082 in the matter of the application of Advanced Telecommunications Incorporated doing business as ATI for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services in South Dakota. The question is, today, shall the Commission grant the COA to Advanced Tel Incorporated DBA ATI? Is there anyone from Advanced Tel wishing to make a presentation at this time? If not, Keith?
Thank you. On June 20th of this year, Advanced Tel Incorporated ATI filed for an application for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services throughout South Dakota. The applicant has requested a waiver of ARSD 2010-2402 Part 8, which is a requirement that they file financial statements. The applicant has agreed to restrictions from offering prepaid services and from accepting customer deposits and advance payments. With that, I would recommend that the Commission grant the waiver request and grant ATI Incorporated an inter-exchange authority subject to the restrictions.
Thank you, Keith. Are there any questions for the Commission? Is there a motion?
I think I've asked this question before, and so I apologize. Please have patience. The rationale for waiving the financial reporting requirements?
They are a startup company. Essentially, they don't have anything. So in return for the waiver, they have agreed to the restrictions.
Wonderful. Thank you. Nothing further, Mr. Chairman.
I will move then that on TC05-082, the Commission grant the certificate of authority according to the recommendations by staff.
I will second. Concur.
Item 3, TC05-101, in the matter of the application of Com Partners LLC for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services and local exchange services in South Dakota. Question before the Commission is, shall the Commission grant a certificate of authority to Com Partners LLC? Is there anyone from Com Partners LLC who wishes to make a presentation today? If not, Bob?
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Bob Nagel, Commission staff. Com Partners LLC filed an application seeking a certificate of authority to provide local exchange and inter-exchange services in South Dakota. Com Partners is in the process of building an internet protocol-based communications network for the provision of voice and data services. The network is designed to connect public and private internet protocol-based networks with the public switch telephone network. The applicant intends to provide local service in the area served by Quest and inter-exchange services throughout South Dakota. The company has requested a waiver from ARSD 2010-2402-8 and 2010-3203-11, which requires the filing of current financial statements by the applicant and has agreed to restrictions from offering prepaid services and collecting deposits and advance payments. Staff recommends approval of the application subject to rural safeguards and subject to the condition that the company not offer any prepaid services and not accept or require any deposits or advance payments without prior approval of the Commission. Staff further recommends a waiver of ARSD 2010-2402
CRAN 8, and ARSD 2010-3203, CRAN 11.
Thank you, Bob. Are there any questions by the commissioners?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Bob, have you had a chance to evaluate, since it's an IP communications network, are they going to have any issues with dealing with things like 911 calls? And what about those other issues that float out there with IP, CLIA, taxes, so on and so forth?
At a state in their filing, I believe that they're going to provide, you know, most of their voice over internet protocol is going to be for wholesale customers, and they're going to provide E911 services to them. They're also trying to contract another company to provide 911 services to those wholesale customers. That's my understanding.
You probably haven't had the opportunity to do this, but have you independently verified that or gotten anything of the information? Because I mean, some of the IP providers had maybe not in exactly these terms, but they had certainly either said or implied that they could offer E911 services, and then when the onion is peeled back, maybe they can, and maybe they can't, and sometimes they can, and sometimes they can't. And not to put you on the spot, but I'm curious if they provided any sort of extra information that would make you feel comfortable that they're actually going to be doing that.
I don't have that information, but I can, I guess, you know, contact the company and get that.
Do you know, are they under any sort of time crunch with getting the COA? Or would we be able to hold this over until the next meeting while you have an opportunity to go and get some additional information?
I think we can probably hold it. This is one of the items that Michelle worked on, and she was just waiting for a sales tax license, which they received that, so I could, you know, talk to Michelle a little bit, I guess, or the company and get that information for you.
Well, and I think that would make me feel more comfortable in the situation. And I certainly, you know, maybe everything is completely fine, and I'm just double-checking unnecessarily, but I think in this situation, it might not be a bad idea to do just a little more due diligence and look into that.
Thank you.
Any further questions at this time?
Mr. Chairman, if it would be in order, I would move to defer docket TC05101 to give staff the opportunity to get some additional information from the applicant.
And I will second. Item number 4, TC5-161. In the matter of the application of Mid-Continent Communications for approval to expand its certificate of authority to provide local exchange service in the Woolsey Exchange of the service territory of Santel Communications Cooperative. Today, the questions before the Commission are, shall the Commission amend Mid-Continent Communications certificate of authority to provide local exchange service in the rural exchange area of Woolsey, South Dakota? And secondly, shall the Commission grant a waiver of ARSD 2010-3218? Mid-Continent, represented today by?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dave Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Peer, and I represent Mid-Continent Communications in this matter. Actually, Brett Kennecke of our office has handled this matter, but since I was here on other matters, he and I conferred, and I am appearing for Mid-Continent in this matter. Mid-Continent believes that all of the requirements are necessary for granting of the amendment have been fulfilled, and that the Commission should be in a position to grant the amendment to Mid-Continent's Certificate of Authority.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff Larson for Santel.
Go ahead. Excuse me one moment. I didn't know if that was a pause or if Dave has concluded his remarks.
I'm sorry.
I've concluded my remark for now, and I'll wait and see what Mr. Larson has to say.
All right. Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Gertis, in the spirit of cooperation, Santel does not object to the granting of the COA.
No. Well, thank you. Do you have any remarks then?
No, I don't. I can't say any more than that.
I have a question.
John Smith?
Mr. Gertis, it wasn't completely clear. I think piecing together the map in Exhibit A and what's stated in the application. Am I correct in that you're requesting authority to serve in the town of Woolsey only and not necessarily in the entirety of Sandhill's Woolsey Exchange area?
We are requesting the town of Woolsey, that's
just
correct.
The town.
That's correct.
And And in your application, you discussed a waiver, and if I understood it correctly, what you're requesting is both a waiver of the requirement that may be in there, if you read the whole chapter as a whole, that you serve the entire service area of Sandhill, and also requesting a definition of the geographic area.
That's correct.
In Rule 15 to encompass merely the town of Woolsey.
That's correct. We're asking for a waiver under ARSD 2010-3218, which would then implicate 15 as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Harlan, did you have anything?
Well, I could go into detail, but I'll just go straight to the recommendation of staff. The staff recommends granting the request to expand Mid-Continent Communications Certificate of Authority within the City of Woolsey in Sandtail's service area, granting the waiver request of ARSD 2010-3218 pursuant to ARSD 2010-3215, and granting the request for confidential treatment of the financial statements that were filed by Mid-Continent Communications.
Thank you. Under the circumstances of the testimony, we appreciate your brevity. Commissioners, do you have anything?
I have a question, probably for Mr. Best, although anybody else can chime in. I mean, talk to me a little bit about the policy implications of allowing a subdivision of an exchange like this. I mean, are there concerns about serving sort of the, if there is meat of the Woolsey Exchange, serving the meat but not the outlying areas?
This application is in response to Sandtel's providing video programming within the Woolsey, within the City of Woolsey, which Mid-Continent Communications has done for a number of years. And the Telecommunications Act of 96 allows this type of local competition on more of an expedited type basis than it would if it was not in response to a competitive programming.
Well, I understand the Federal Telecom Act and sort of the, you know, losing of the rural exemptions. From the state rule perspective, I mean, do you also feel that there aren't any public policy concerns about waiving that requirement?
I don't think there is. This is consistent with the certificates of authority for the expansion of Mid-Continent's certificate that were granted within the City of Webster and the City of Wabe within the Inter-Exchange Telecommunications Cooperative Service Area also.
And just so I can clarify, we're asking for a waiver of Section 15. Is that right? I mean, ARSD 2010-3215?
Right.
And 18 is the waiver provision.
Right. 15 requires that they would serve the entirety of Sandtel's service area, and all this would be the waiver grants them the service only within a small portion of the service area.
Thank you.
Any further questions? If not, I have a motion. Under TC05-161 for the Mid-Continent application for amendment of the COA to serve Woolsey, I move to amend Mid-Continent Communications Certificate of Authority to provide local exchange service in the rural exchange area of Woolsey, South Dakota. I further move to grant Mid-Continent a waiver pursuant to ARSD 2010-3218 of any requirement under the Commission's rules that Mid-Continent be required to serve Sandtel's entire study area. And I further move that the geographic area within which Mid-Continent shall be authorized to provide local exchange service and shall have the obligations imposed thereon by the laws of South Dakota and the communications rules shall be the area included on Exhibit A to Mid-Continent's application, which includes the town of Woolsey but excludes the area of Sandtel's Woolsey Exchange outside of the town of Woolsey. And I further move to include recommendations by staff regarding confidentialities. I second.
I concur.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Item number 5, in the matter of the approval of the amendments to agreements and dockets TC05-181, TC05-182,
183, 187, and 188. The question before the Commission is, today shall the Commission approve the amendments to the agreements? Sarah.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. I would like to note that all of the companies in the preceding dockets that you just called do have a valid certificate of authority in South Dakota. All the amendments to the agreements were properly filed. They contain no discriminatory language, and there were no comments filed during the intervention period. And staff would recommend approval of all the amendments.
Thank you, Ms. Greff. Are there any questions by the commissioners? If not, I will move that the commission approve the amendments to the agreements.
I second.
I concur.
TC-05192, question before the commission is, shall the commission grant the extension for exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates? Ms. Greff.
Actually, I think Mr. Sanger is going to handle this one.
Mr. Sanger.
Thank you. Orbitcom is a competitive LEC who was certified before this commission in June of 2002. In October of 2002, Orbitcom received a three-year exemption from filing company-specific cost-based intrastate switched access rates. In that filing, Orbitcom adopted the Quest rates. On November 15th of this year, Orbitcom filed a petition in accordance with ARSD 2010-2711 and asked the commission to continue the waiver previously received. Specifically, they're asking for a waiver of ARSD 2010-2707 and 2010-2712 and are requesting to use the Quest ILEC rates. Orbitcom justifies its request in that ARSD 2010-2712 would require them to use the average schedule rate, which is computed by the average rate of all the companies serving fewer than 100,000 access lines. The Quest rate is approximately half of that rate. Furthermore, Orbitcom states that on the interstate jurisdiction, the FCC generally prohibits switched access rates higher than those charged by the ILEC. In fact, the FCC, in the seventh report and order and further notice of proposed rulemaking, FCC 01-146, requires the CLEC to use the ILEC rate or to adopt the FCC benchmark rate. Absent the South Dakota intrastate benchmark rate, Orbitcom wishes to adopt the ILEC rate, the Quest rate. In previous dockets such as this, Commission staff has recommended that the Commission grant such an exemption for 3 years. However, staff believes that limiting this exemption to a three-year period for companies who are adopting the ILEC rate does not serve a meaningful purpose and may create an administrative burden for both the CLEC and the Commission. Therefore, in this case, staff is recommending that the Commission grant Orbitcom's waiver of ARSC 2010-2707 and 2010-2712 and allow Orbitcom to adopt Quest intrastate switched access rate with no time restrictions. We are also recommending that the Commission allow Orbitcom to file adjustments to its intrastate switched access rate so long as those adjustments either mirror Quest or are at a rate lower than that of Quest, the ILEC. Thanks.
Thank you, Keith. Are there any questions?
I have a couple, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Mr. Sanger, is this a policy that you think would be appropriate for other companies as well in the situation requesting to mirror Quest rates?
Yes, we are. Staff met last week, maybe the week before, and we decided that we're going to, if you guys approve this, we are going to move forward with all companies who come in with this request for those that are mirroring the ILEC rate.
Do you see any downside to this?
We've discussed it. We cannot think of any downside. We can only think of upsides. Some of the advantages are, as to my knowledge, the commission has never forced a CLEC to file a cost study. We do have one CLEC who does file a cost study. Many of the CLECs who are asking for this request don't even keep their books in a fashion that they can file our cost study rules. They use GAAP accounting instead of the FCC Uniform Chart of Accounts. Furthermore, this is kind of in a fashion where we're just going to mirror kind of what the FCC has been doing. The FCC does not force CLECs to file cost studies. In fact, we've got a case now where one of the CLECs who filed a cost study with the FCC is still being forced to use the ILEC rate or the benchmark rate, and they have actually issued a letter to the FCC asking for that. But in this case, it appears that the FCC is mandating that they use either the benchmark rate or the ILEC rate.
And then just from an administrative standpoint, one request I would have is that we make sure, and maybe it'll be in place anyway, but we have some sort of tracking system so we basically know the people who are on the going forward basis without having the periodic reviews, just because I know that's, you know, one advantage to having the periodic review is basically it's almost from a housekeeping standpoint, or you know who's out there, what's going on, and what time frame. So, you know, I'm comfortable with following staff's recommendation, but I do want to make sure we have an adequate tracking system so that if for whatever reason we need to go back and make a change, we're in a situation where we can quickly find these companies.
Prior to coming before the commission, Harlan sat down and went through all the CLECs who have filed an intrastate access tariff, intrastate access tariff, and compiled a list, and we can use that list as a tracking device.
And I'll just look to one of the attorneys. We don't have any problem if we do a motion and say going forward you can mirror the quest rates. We don't have a problem if at some point in time we need to take that ability away, do we? I assume, is there something we need to add to the motion, or can the commission give it and take it away without having any problem?
I think you can take it away. That's my opinion.
Thank you.
Any further questions? If not, is there a motion?
Yeah, and I think it's my duty after all those questions to make the motion, Mr. Chairman. I will move that we grant the extension for exemption from developing company-specific cost base switch access rates in TC05192.
I will concur. Electricity, EL05-016, in the matter of the filing by Superior Renewable Energy, LLC, and others against Montana Dakota Utilities Company regarding the Java Wind Project. The questions that are before the commission this morning are, today shall the commission grant the motion to dismiss one or more issues stated in the motion? Secondly, shall the commission grant the motion in limine to limit introduction of certain pre-filed testimony and exhibits? Third, shall the commission grant the motion for summary judgment? Fourth, shall the commission rule today prior to hearing on whether to assess a filing fee against Superior under SDCL 49-1A-11 as previously requested by the executive director, and if so, in what amount? Or shall the commission defer action on this issue until after the hearing? Mr. Gerdes.
My name is Dave Gerdes. I'm a lawyer from Pier, and I represent Montana Dakota Utilities in this docket. Mr. Smith and I were on the phone yesterday with Brad Moody, who represents Superior in this docket. The commission may have noticed yesterday the sound of a great sigh, and that sigh came from the collective parties, and it was a sigh of relief that perhaps we have this matter settled. We recognized when we talked on the phone yesterday that this we had fought this before and it has not come to fruition. However, we do think we do have a settlement this time. The parties are right now reviewing a contract. We think that it will be settled. But in fairness to all the parties, what we talked about was that, and I'm making a motion or asking the commission to defer the items on this docket to the now scheduled first day of the hearing, just so procedurally the hearing is still teed up should this settlement fall through. We do not think it will, but in fairness to all the parties, I think we need to preserve these issues. And if we do have a settlement, there's no need to address the issues that are teed up today. So it was our belief that the best way to handle it would be to ask the commission to defer these items until the first day of the hearing, which I think on my calendar is the 12th. Of December. 13th of December. And so Mr. Smith was on the line. Mr. Moody could not be on the line today, but asked Mr. Smith to, I think, verify what I just got done telling you. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Smith.
I think Mr. Gerdes fairly represented the contents of the the discussion, and I would characterize what transpired really as a stipulation by the parties to continue to defer action on these items until 13th, at which time hopefully they'll all become moot and we don't ever have to consider that. And that's what I'd recommend.
Thank you. In the event that someone was able to join us, is there anyone on the line representing any of the parties who wishes to make a presentation at this time? Does staff have anything to present to us? Are there any questions by the commissioners? If not, I will make a motion. Based upon the stipulation of the parties, I move to defer action on all of the motions and questions on the agenda until the beginning of the hearing scheduled to commence on December 13th, 2005, or until such other time as the commission shall schedule the matters for a decision.
Mr. Chairman, I second.
And I concur.
Thank you. Under telecommunications, we have an addendum, TC04-213, in the matter of the filing by Brookings Municipal Utilities doing business as Swift Telecommunications for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier. The question before the commission today, the commission designate Brookings Municipal Utilities, DBA, Swift Telecommunications as an eligible telecommunications carrier. And who is first up on this one? Brookings?
Yes, I believe Brookings could go first.
Is Swiftel, are you with us?
He was in his car.
Yes.
I'm here. We should be represented by Lynn Ratnavale or David Lafuria, if they're on the line.
Swiftel? David? He was with us at one point. David, are you with us?
Yes. Yes, we're back now. We got disconnected. Apologies.
Good morning. You are up.
Okay. I'm not sure where we left off, but December the 2nd, I believe it is, we submitted a response to questions from staff that arose out of the last hearing on the application of Brookings, and to date we've not received any follow-up questions, and hopefully the responses that we gave were sufficient, and if that's the case, we would urge the commission to grant the application today.
Is that your entire presentation at this time?
At this moment, yes. Unless we hear from others, that would be our presentation, yes.
Thank you. Should we go to everyone and then questions, or did you have a question? All right. Mr. Coit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm assuming this is on.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, commissioners, and staff, my name is Richard Coit, and I'm here today representing SBTA. As you know, Swiftel is a member of SBTA, but this particular filing raises a policy issue which we feel is an important policy issue. We feel the FCC has addressed it in a certain way that makes sense, and we would like this commission to act in a manner consistently with the FCC with respect to the issue. And the issue involves the question of whether this commission should designate a carrier as a competitive carrier as an ETC in an area that encompasses less than a wire center or an exchange area. I guess you can term the issue as whether the commission should not only designate but also redefine the service area to cover an area that is less than a wire center area. With respect to the companies that are affected by this filing, the SBTA member company, as I mentioned at the last meeting, that is affected
by this request to designate below a wire center. From what I can tell from the application, I believe the only SDTA member company affected is ITC. And the four areas that I believe are affected where there are exchanges or wire centers that that Swiftel is seeking to receive designation in only part of those areas are Elkton first, and from what I, the information that I've received from Jerry Heiberger, manager at ITC, in Elkton, there are approximately 583 customers that are in South Dakota and 19 in Minnesota. The wire center of Gary, where there are approximately 434 customers in South Dakota and 77 in Minnesota. And let me see, what else here? Astoria, which is really very different in that it's 112 customers in South Dakota and only one in Minnesota. And then West Hendricks and Hendricks, where there are 112 customers located in South Dakota and 744 in Minnesota. And I believe West Hendricks and Hendricks are actually one exchange or wire center. Now, if you look at the response, right. Yes.
I apologize. Those are the wire centers where, I mean, sorry, those are the exchanges or wire centers. Can you preface that again? What exactly were those for again?
The four?
No, not which, what is the criteria you're noting them on?
Well, that those are actually exchange areas that are where Swiftel is asking you to redefine below the wire center.
Okay.
Or below the exchange area for those four.
Okay. Thank you. And that's what I thought.
Okay.
Make sure.
Okay. Thank you. The suggestion is made in the correspondence, and the date on the correspondence is November 30th that was sent by Swiftel to the commission. And there are quite a number of staff questions that are addressed. On page 3, in answer to the commission staff question number 6, there's a statement along the lines that, you know, the FCC has in the past designated below the wire center, and there's an implication anyway or an argument that, you know, that this has been done in the past and it's okay and it should continue to be done in the future. And there are a number of cases that are cited at the bottom of that page in footnotes. With respect to those cases, I think that if you look at the FCC decision since those cases were decided, those ones that are cited in the Swiftel response, a lot has happened. The FCC has definitely departed from that approach that they took previously to designate below the wire center. Since these decisions that are cited, and the latest one is Cellular Self License Inc., and that was decided on December 4th of 2002. Since that time, we have the Virginia Cellular and the Highland Cellular decisions. We also have an FCC decision on the joint board recommendations that specifically addressed and tightened up the ETC designation process and also the redefinition process. And I'm just going to cite some of the language from the Highland Cellular, the Virginia Cellular, or at least the Highland Cellular case and the commission's decision on the joint board recommendations, because I really do believe that it signals the fact that the FCC is no longer taking the same approach and has actually established a new requirement that the minimum geographic area for ETC designations be the wire center area. First, looking at the Highland Cellular case, paragraph 33 of the Highland order, the FCC stated as follows. Finally, we conclude that designating Highland Cellular as an ETC and a portion of United Telephone's Saltville wire center would not serve the public interest. Although the Wireline Competition Bureau previously designated an ETC for portions of a rural telephone company's wire center, and to interject there, the decision that the FCC actually cites is this RCC case that's actually cited in the Swiftel response. the FCC went on and said, we conclude that making designations for a portion of a rural telephone company's wire center would be inconsistent with the public interest. In particular, we conclude that prior to designating an additional ETC in a rural telephone company service area, the competitor must commit to provide the supported services to customers throughout a minimum geographic area. A rural telephone company's wire center is an appropriate minimum geographic area for ETC designation because rural carrier wire centers typically correspond with county and or town lines. We believe that requiring a competitive ETC to serve entire communities will make it less likely that the competitor will relinquish its ETC designation at a later date because consumers in rural areas tend to have fewer competitive alternatives than consumers in urban areas. Such consumers are more vulnerable to carriers relinquishing ETC designation. If you then go to the FCC's decision on the joint board recommendations in paragraph 77 of that decision, at the time that the FCC addressed the joint board recommendations, there were also pending before the FCC some redefinition petitions. In their decision on the joint board recommendation, they addressed these indirectly. They say, since these petitions were filed, the commission released the Highland Cellular's ETC designation order in which the commission rejected Highland's petition for designation in only a portion of a rural incumbent LEC service area. Specifically, Highland requested that it be allowed to serve parts of the rural incumbent LEC's wire centers. We concluded that designating an ETC for only a portion of a wire center served by a rural LEC would be inconsistent with public interest. We also found that the competitive ETC applicant must commit to provide the supported services to customers throughout a minimum geographic area. We concluded that a rural telephone company's wire center is the appropriate minimum geographic area for ETC designation. And they went on then to say that even though they actually granted some of these redefinition petitions at that time, they went on to say, on a going forward basis, we intend to rigorously apply the standards set forth in Highland and Virginia Cellular cases. And that's in paragraph 79 of the FCC's decision on the joint board recommendations. So we believe, looking at these decisions, that there's no question that the FCC, subsequent to these cases cited in the Swiftfell response, has established a new requirement. And that requirement is that they're not going to designate ETCs below the wire center or redefine below the wire center. I think that's pretty clear from the decisions they've made. They've indicated that they're going to rigorously apply that those standards in Highland and Virginia Cellular. And I think that's particularly important because any service area redefinition here is going to have to go to the FCC for approval. So I think that should give you even more incentive to act consistently with the FCC's approach. I would also say that with respect to ITC in particular, they have not disaggregated their USF support at all. So you don't have a situation where, you know, they've got zones outside of the towns or whatever where the USF support amounts are different. So I think there are certainly some cream skimming issues that are relevant to the decision as well. With respect to Astoria, you know, I don't know what you do with that one. I mean, realistically, you got one customer in Minnesota. You know, maybe that one needs to be viewed, you know, at least from a practical perspective as being something different. But the from a policy standpoint, we as a rural telephone company industry do not believe that it makes sense to start designating below the wire center. And I think if you look at the FCC decisions, the two factors that they consider more importantly than anything there is that if you start designating below the wire center, it makes it easier for somebody who's designated to later pull out, or they may have incentive to pull out later just because, you know, if they've been designated in only a small portion of a wire center area, there's maybe not a lot of reason for them to stay. So I think from the standpoint of stability, ensuring that there's no relinquishment of designations, it's important for that reason. The other reason that they cite in their decisions is just administratively, when you start breaking up wire centers, the cream skimming issues become more complicated. In addition to that, I could see that if, in terms of filing for USF support, it'd probably be easier to track to make sure that lines are actually eligible for support if you're doing it on a wire center basis and not carving up wire centers. So with that, I'm sorry for going on as long as I did, but I think it is an important issue.
We have Lilian, did you want to go next, or do you?
Mr. Chairman, can I ask just a quick clarifying question?
Sure.
And I apologize. I normally pull up my files on my laptop, and the network isn't working here right now, so I'm going to ask you a question I probably could have looked up on my own, Mr. Coit. When you talk about these four wire centers, is the situation where they are taking the South Dakota side customers and not the Minnesota customers? Is that the breakdown?
I
believe so. And Swift, I'll certainly can correct that if anything's wrong, or Perkins can. And then the other side of that is, you know, do they have the licenses in Minnesota?
I'm not sure if they actually. I do not believe they do, but they would. Swiftel would be able to answer that.
I'm just curious. Well, I'll hold the questions for later. Thank you.
Roland, did you have some questions?
Yes. So, Rich, when you were talking about those orders, though, did any of those orders or those situations, or have they been applied to the situation where you're actually talking about not serving an entire wire center just because it crosses state lines? I don't know that any of those apply to that.
I'm not sure on that either, but I really don't believe that it matters. I think that, you know, if you look at it from a policy standpoint, if their license goes into Minnesota, and I'm not sure that it does, but if it does and it covers an entire wire center area, then I think before they should be designated in that wire center, then, you know, go get concurrence from Minnesota or go get a designation in Minnesota for the rest of that area so you can cover the entire wire center. I think if you don't take that approach, you know, you're basically, in large part, just ignoring the whole wire center issue, because certainly you're going to have quite a few exchanges that, you know, are going to be in both states. I think the critical thing is where their licensed areas.
Right, but let's say they're not licensed in Minnesota at all. Then wouldn't that be put in a situation where any exchange that overlaps boundaries, you're not going to designate a second ETC? What's their jurisdiction to designate them over in Minnesota?
Well, I think that's true, but I also think that if you look at the approach that's being taken with ETC designations now, there's a lot more caution than there used to be. And I think there's a better recognition now that it isn't always in the public interest to designate a second competitive ETC in a very rural area. I think you as a commission, you know, it's a policy decision for you. I do believe, though, that the FCC has made the decision that they're not going to do it below the wire center. And I really, unless there's some other case out there, since the Virginia Cellular and the Highland Cellular and the decision on the joint board recommendation since that time that would indicate the FCC will not apply it in those situations, you know, I think maybe I have not caught that case, but I'm not aware that there is any. And, the FCC in their decision certainly didn't indicate that that's some exception. Now, in those previous cases that are cited in the Swiftel response, I think those cases do stand for that you know, there was the reason that they did that was because of the two jurisdictions. But then I think pretty clearly the FCC came along later and said, we're not going to do that anymore. They even referenced one of those decisions.
Right. I just don't think they necessarily addressed the overlapping.
Maybe not directly.
Exchanges in other states.
Thank you. Does Swiftel have a statement to make at this point?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. First of all, to confirm the fact, Swiftel does not have licenses in Minnesota. If it did, this would probably be a non-issue. First of all, in referring to the cases, the RCC case and the Cellular South case in Mississippi, there were what I would call both situations in those cases. That is, In that case, the FCC drew partial wire centers that were within a state, and in their more recent decisions said, well, we're not going to do that anymore. But in both of those cases, the commission also drew partial wire centers where they overlap. It was Alabama and Mississippi in those cases. And having represented both of those clients, I believe that in at least one and maybe both of those cases, that the applicant also did not have a license in the neighboring state. I'm also aware of Colorado, the other state does not come to me right now, but Colorado does come to mind as a case I could point you to where they designated a carrier within the jurisdictional boundaries of the state and did not require them to either go get a license in another state or serve customers in another state where they don't have a license. A number of states have been critical of ILEX who have claimed cream skimming issues, but have never come forward and presented any specific evidence of such cream skimming. And that's certainly the case here. I heard a couple of comments this morning that were general in nature, but nothing specific with respect to any of these four wire centers that would give the commission any indication that cream skimming is any kind of a problem here. I think a carrier who wants to claim that there is a cream skimming issue has to present some prima facie evidence of that, and they've not done so. Furthermore, if cream skimming really is an issue, the FCC's rules continue to allow rural ILECs, such as ITC, to disaggregate their support, or if they've already disaggregated, they can modify their plan of disaggregation to move the port into the proper areas so that a competitor will receive no uneconomic benefits of subsidies by serving areas that are low cost to the ILEC. That opportunity remains here for ITC, and if they think that there is a problem there, they can certainly bring it to the Commission's attention in the form of a petition to disaggregate their support. And if they're doing it properly, I can't imagine that this or any other commission would refuse them the ability to more accurately target support to the consumers who need it most. Further, the FCC's order applies to designations that the FCC makes. Washington and maybe one other state I can think of since have disagreed with the FCC and have designated carriers on their own. It's true that you're going to have to go to the FCC with a petition for redefinition, and if you present this petition to them and state that the areas not being served are outside of the state, I'm not certain what the FCC will do. They may agree with your decision here because it is across state boundaries. And they may come back to you and say, we don't want you to do it this way. And if that's the case, then the commission is going to have to decide whether to not designate in these four wire centers or to ask ITC for a plan of disaggregation so that they can and sort that out between this commission and the FCC ultimately. Finally, if you don't designate in these areas, there are 1,237 people inside and 841 outside, and if you'll forgive me for trying to do math here this morning on the numbers that were provided. I think those numbers are right. Fundamentally, there's 1,237 potential customers here in South Dakota who are not going to get the benefit of investment because Swiftel will not be able to invest facilities in those areas. And low-income people in that area will not be able to get Lifeline benefits from Swiftel. So ultimately, I don't understand why this should be such a big issue for ITC other than to prevent competition from coming into these four wire centers. That's all I have.
Thank you. Harlan or Karen, did you have something for us?
I have another question for you. All right. If that's okay. This is Rolaine Weiss, acting as the commission counsel. And my question for you, Mr. LaFuria, is I'm sure you recall this in the RCC case where, for example, in some of the wire centers, the commission did designate you for areas, even for areas that lie outside the boundaries of your FCC licensed area. And then the commission required you to provide service to requesting customers in those areas outside your licensed area by extension, resale, or other arrangements. Could that be possible in this instance?
I would not say that it's impossible. It will be more difficult than in an ordinary circumstance because since the areas are in Minnesota and the company does not have a license there, the company is going to have to go to the Minnesota state authorities, get a license, a certification to do business within the state, and comply with any other certification or other requirements that the state would have to either resell or otherwise provide service within the state. The company does not have authority to go and build any facilities in Minnesota. And so for the 841 people who are scattered out there, what I would say to you is it's highly likely, knowing what I know about Minnesota, that there's already another ETC providing service there, either RCC or Midwest Wireless or Western Wireless or Nextech. There are a number that have been designated. And so the high likelihood here is that those customers in those areas already have an ETC providing service, and so there's competition throughout these wire centers, and I think it's very unlikely that, you know, in terms of cream skimming, if you have competition throughout an entire wire center, whether it's from one carrier or two carriers, it's still the same analysis. You're as a regulator, your big concern is that there be competition throughout an area.
And is it your understanding that Minnesota requires a wireless company to get certification?
I don't know precisely if you go into Minnesota without a license and just want to resell service, what exactly the steps are. The carriers that I represent in Minnesota are facilities-based carriers, so I only know what they had to do.
Okay, thank you. I had another question, but it wasn't related to this issue. If anybody has questions more about this issue.
Okay. I'm hesitating a little bit, trying to figure out who's on first, who's on second, et cetera. Karen, do you give your recommendation after we are completed with everything, including questions by the commissioners, et cetera, et cetera? All right. Are there any questions at this time by commissioners?
I have some, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Mr. LaFury, and maybe Mr. Atkins or Mr. Larson can help on this. I'm just curious. I was looking at the build-out plan assumptions, which are about $100,000 per year in USF support. And, you know, in the previous cases, we've had full hearings on these matters, so we've had the ability to look at numbers, cross-examine people, get additional information, and we don't have that ability here. So I was just going to ask, based on my knowledge of Brookings customer accounts, the $100,000 seems lower than I'd expect, except for you're probably in Brookings' territory and a lot of Quest territory. Is that why the numbers are maybe lower than you might see for an RCC or Western Wireless looking at statewide designation?
David here, Commissioner. I don't know the precise answer to that. I do know that compared to RCC, there are more Quest areas here generally, and assume that since they're in lower cost areas, those are, you know, when I say lower cost, I mean Quest getting less support per line than some of the rural telcos. I'm making an assumption in answering your question here that that's why the numbers are projected to be lower.
Okay, thank you. And that's what I thought, and that would make sense. But I was just curious because relative to, you know, per customer type support, it seemed a little lower than some of the other figures that we've seen. And then I'm curious, and maybe this is more for Jim Atkins or Jeff Larson, exchanges that are in question, Elkton, Gary, Astoria, Hendricks, and then I'd say even that, beyond those ones that are kind of being singled out because it involves some wire center issues, throughout the area that where you're at requesting designation, I know our office has received a lot of requests from people out there who would like to have better wireless service. I mean, have you gotten a lot of comments from folks out there in these areas as well?
That was of Mr.
I had to unmute my phone here.
Thanks, Jim.
yes, we've got some requests outside and certainly would like to serve more customers as we expand our network. One of the things we find ourselves doing is phoning customers' phones. I think buy out our network area. But we're always interested in expanding our RF coverage.
And Jim, I apologize for asking you to repeat yourself, but we're having a little trouble with the phone connection here.
Okay.
And I think I'm guessing it's on your end.
All right. We are always interested in expanding our coverage, and certainly we do receive requests from customers that are just outside of our RF coverage area, and we try and make every accommodation to them in terms of providing them one of our telephones to make sure that it will work properly in their area. I mean, we're interested in providing them the service. Sometimes we're not able to provide them the adequate service and end up going elsewhere, but we would, we're definitely interested in expanding our network to cover more of these.
Thank you. And then this may go more to Mr. LaFuria, but I'm looking at your build-out plan, and you're dealing with what appears to be, you know, relatively small USF support that's going to be coming your way. You're picking up designation in a fairly large geographic area. With dealing with the situation of responding to reasonable requests for service, is it going to be a challenge? I mean, obviously, you don't have to do that overnight. I think the FCC has clearly said, you know, you have some reasonable period of time to go out there and serve these communities. You know, at the same time, you start getting to, like, the Garys and the Eltons and the Hendricks, and maybe you'll pick up some of these from other towers. I don't know, or maybe they already have service through Splitfell, Sprint, Brookings. But I'm just curious, in some of these areas, based on the USF support that you're getting, how do you guys intend to actually go out there and respond to requests from the people that are in the more rural areas? Because T, Henry, Castwood, Lenox, Centerville, you know, I think are certainly welcome additions to the network, and I think very important. So I like to hear names like that. You know, at the same time, what happens when you start getting requests from 200 people in Gary to have better wireless service?
That's a good question, and let me give you the very practical answer first, and then the legal answer with it. The practical answer is, I would take you back to when the ILEC services in this state were very immature, when they first built out the cities and started to extend their networks out into the rural areas, and when the more rural telcos here first started up and began stringing wires. That's essentially where wireless is today, and it will take time and it will take effort to take the available funds and hopefully use them to get more customers, to generate more support, to then multiply the effort in constructing networks farther out into those areas from where we are today. In the meantime, the commitment to provide service throughout the area is immediate, and the only way to get there is to follow what the law allows, which is, in areas where you don't have service and you can't get service today, you will be required to respond through either a resale or a roaming arrangement, roaming being a form of resale. So if the company has a roaming agreement with another company out in an area, they can go out and offer service today, and if a customer comes forward, they can provide them service through a roaming agreement, and the customer can take service. The company will not get any high-cost support for that customer because they are resale, but that customer would get service, and hopefully what will happen is there will be enough customers in an area that will form a critical mass, much like in the wireline world, where if you get 200, let's say, you do your little business plan, and you say, okay, with 200, if we build it and we get a couple hundred more, or we get some roaming traffic or some other revenues out of it, it makes sense to build, and we can convert those roaming customers to our facilities, which would then generate revenue from them for both their what the customer pays, and then the company would get support if they were on their facilities. It's through that process that you start to knit together your network, and I think if you look back in the commission's orders, the FCC's orders, they've talked about how ILECs have had an opportunity to build their networks out all the while receiving support, and that wireless carriers deserve the same opportunity. And that's the opportunity that the company's looking for.
And I think with the other two designations that we've put into, that we've given on the wireless side of things, one of the things we've looked for is a sort of a planning process with commission staff, because in these rural areas, I mean, as much as possible, it would be beneficial to see providers go in with the underserved communities and work with staff to come up with a battle plan, so to speak, or maybe not so much a battle plan, but to get out there and serve as many communities as possible, because I'm sort of stating the obvious, but if Altel wants to put up a tower in Gary, I'm not sure with the challenges with wireless communication in the northeast part of the state that we'll need that would be the best public policy, even though you could do it, to have Sprint and RCC also putting up towers there as well, as opposed to going out there and serving some of the other, you know, comparable communities. And so I hope Swiftel would have interest in working with us and trying to come up with a sensible planning going forward in a good interactive process.
Commissioner, I can represent for the company that they would be happy to do that. I will also tell you that the current mechanism, which only pays on a per-line basis, is a very good market-based system for ensuring that you don't get multiple networks in areas that will not support them. If there's an area that only has a few customers and it makes sense for one carrier to build it, when a carrier does build it and captures customers in that area, the second or third carrier that comes in is going to have to make that business plan that somebody else is there first, somebody else has already captured a chunk of the good subscribers in that area, and if there's not enough customer dollars and support dollars to make sense for carrier number two or three to come in there, they won't do it, and they're going to have to go spend their dollars and their investment capital farther out and away. So I think you've got a good mechanism that the FCC has set up to accomplish that, and I'm hopeful that it'll work here in South Dakota.
And I think to a certain extent that there's a lot of truth to that statement. The problem we have is that, of course, everyone wants to build along the interstate for obvious reasons, and they don't necessarily all want to go off and split up a small town. So, I mean, I appreciate the commitment to continue to work with the commission if you receive designation. Thank you.
Further questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have a couple. As we talk about, you know, roaming agreements between carriers, you know, somebody essentially gets to a rural area first. Are there technical difficulties? I mean, is that possible with PCS versus cellular?
Well, the precise answer to your question is you have roaming agreements with carriers that have common technologies.
Right.
Some carriers have CDMA technology and some have GSM. It's not so much a cellular PCS problem, because many of the phones today can talk on both the cellular frequencies and the PCS frequencies. So if you give a customer a cellular phone and they roam into a PCS area, the phone will flip to PCS. What it won't do is it won't flip from CDMA to GSM, at least not yet. And so Swiftel, being a Sprint partner, has a CDMA network. And so any other carrier with a CDMA technology in the state will roam with Swiftel.
Yeah, thank you. That all makes sense. Thanks for the refresher. And again, I'm like Commissioner Starr, I'm having a hard time pulling up some files I wanted to review. Did I read something in the petition about new and improved service to Madison? Am I remembering that right?
Well, now you're quizzing me. I'd have to look. I've got my petition here. I'll have to look back to answer you.
Well, and the only reason I ask is that as we look at a build-out plan, which I know is just tentative and was offered as to respond to staff's request, I don't see anything, any investment in the Madison area. So I just want to make sure those two things jive. And if you need some time to look at that, I certainly understand. I'm quizzing you a bit here.
I think I've got an answer for you. I'm looking at paragraph 29. It says Brookings anticipates commencing construction of new facilities that would bring new or improved services to the communities in or around the city of Madison in Lake County, South Dakota.
So I'm remembering half right. Thanks very much.
All right.
But has that, this is Roland Weiss, has that changed? Because then in your five-year build-out plan for year one, you have what you would be doing is building a T-repeater, and you don't mention Madison?
Hold on for just a second. We're coming through here to see if I can give you a quick answer.
It's an excellent question. I didn't ask because I wasn't sure if any of those small towns were in Lake County. We're up.
If there are any other questions, well, if you want to ask them while we're thumbing through here, we can. Well, if you bear with us, we should be able to get to it. There's a good stack of paper here.
Well, sure. I have another question. I kind of, with respect to exhibits B, C, and D, in your most recent filing, I think it's like the third amendment to those exhibits. Looking through it again, Sioux Valley keeps changing the exchanges, and now it appears in that North Larchwood, Valley Springs, they're not with Sioux Valley, and it is Hills, it's not Alliance. So my first question is for considering Sioux Valley, that's on Exhibit D, and what you want to serve is Colton, Del Rapids, and Humboldt. But if you look at the RCC decision for the Sioux Valley, that service area was redefined, Colton, Del Rapids, and Humboldt. So shouldn't that be on C, Exhibit C?
I guess your question is, in the RCC case, the three wire centers were redefined as one service area.
Right.
And the two that are out were redefined as a second service area.
Yes.
And so this would more properly appear on Exhibit C.
Is that correct, or am I missing something?
I don't know. I mean, I now would have to look back at the RCC decision to confirm it. If you're correct, then I would move these to Exhibit C.
And then for Exhibit D, it's my understanding that you have Alliance Communications Cooperative as North Larchwood and Valley Springs, but that actually, according to your new list, should actually be Hills. Is that correct?
Yes.
And Exhibit B, which you didn't put in for as a amended exhibit, that Arlington should be have taken off Exhibit B, the quest areas. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mr. LaFuria, this is Commissioner Gary Hansen. If you receive the ETC status, would you be serving anyone who is not presently receiving service? Would there be any additional customers that are citizens who would be receiving service who are not receiving service at this time?
First of all, throughout the proposed ETC service area, the company will offer its services immediately so that if consumers want service, they will have service provided to them. Secondly, in their construction plan, I believe there are new construction projects in there which are areas that are outside the company's current service area, where that is where it actually provides service. I don't know how many people are in that area, and I can't tell here whether we've included that information in the exhibit. But my assumption is when there are new cell sites constructed outside of your area, there will be new consumers that get service.
Those are consumers who are new to Swiftel, but not necessarily new to services.
Correct. I can't say whether those consumers are able to get service from any other wireless company, but I know they can't get service from Swiftel.
Okay. You do have a build-out plan that was alluded to several times during the discussion here and shows the $100,000 a year. Do you anticipate that will, in fact, be the entire amount you receive in USF funds?
Well, that amount represents what the company believes it will receive in the first year based on where we are today. So if you go to year two, my assumption is there will be more funds, and there obviously would be more construction if there's more funds. So in a sense, what you've got is, well, let's say you made this designation on January 1 of 06 for purposes of this example. In October of 06, the state has to recertify Brookings, and at that time the company would have to come back to you. And by then, I think we will have some. I don't know that the projections for the first quarter of 07 will not be out yet. But there will be enough information available to give you some estimate of what is anticipated to be received in 07, and you would get a status report on what's been done on the build-out plan that was submitted thus far, and then secondly, how many dollars are anticipated in 07 and how those dollars would be used.
Certainly. Thank you. Mr. Coit, a question to you on similar to what I just asked Mr. LaFuria. Are you serving all of the consumers in that particular area at this time? Is there anyone new that you're aware of that would be that is not receiving service, that you are unable to provide service to, who would receive service if they receive ETC status?
You know, I can't answer that other than to say that, you know, I think throughout the rural telephone landline areas, the companies pretty much serve anybody who requests service unless, you know, they've got some line extension issues that they can't get resolved, which from what I understand, that happens very, very rarely, and if it does happen, it usually ends up here. So I'm suspecting that, certainly all the companies extend service to all customers within their areas.
So you're not aware of any citizens in the service area, ITC or Sioux Valley, who are not receiving service, who have requested service?
Yeah, I'm not aware, but, you know, I certainly wouldn't really know that either other than to know what the company practice is. I would like to, I guess, I've got a question that comes up and maybe looking at the latest Exhibit D, and I failed to catch this, but the North Larchwood and Valley Springs exchanges, Harlan, you may have a better idea than me, you know, how much of those exchanges are outside of South Dakota and how much are in. I don't know. It looks to me like those maybe are two other exchanges that I didn't realize, I guess, that they had been repicked up by Alliance. I thought they were still Hills exchanges, but looking at this latest exhibit, maybe Alliance is affected, too, by the request for partial. And maybe that's something that needs to be looked at least those two exchanges in terms of split.
Rich, I'm sorry, it's David. Those are supposed to be Hills exchanges, not Alliance.
They are?
Yes.
Okay, so that's incorrect on the way it's listed on that present.
Correct.
The present Exhibit D, then. And the reason I ask is that Alliance is a SBTA member. Hills is not. So, and I'm here representing SBTA, other SBTA members.
So was Hills given, here's another question, this is Roland Weiss, was Hills given notice of this then, of the application?
Mr. LaFuria?
I'm not sure, you're, Commissioner. My understanding is that Hills is either owned by Alliance or is a sister company of Alliance. This is information that was provided to me, so I can't say, and I don't, I'm thumbing through here to see if they were given any notice, and I don't see anything at the moment.
And I don't know if they have different managers or not. I was just surprised when Mr. Coit said that Hills wasn't a member and Alliance was. So.
No,
that's why,
but I think,
believe
I know there's a connection. I'm not sure the extent of the connection, but Hills as a corporate entity is not a member of SBTA. Certainly Alliance is. So, you know, it looks to me like those exchanges are again in areas where they're asking for partial designation. I don't know what the customer counts are, though.
Any further questions?
For discussion purposes, I was just going to raise the issue. It seems though we still have some inaccurate exhibits and some question about whether or not proper notice was given. I'm not making a motion, but for discussion's sake, I guess I would raise the specter of deferral and gauge interest.
I would second that when you make the motion.
Why don't we just do a motion?
So moved. Second.
And I concur.
Thank you all very much. We have announcements to make. Next regularly scheduled commission meeting is December 20th. Commission meetings are also scheduled for January 17 and 31st. A hearing in docket TC05-137 will be held December 6th through 8th in room 468, Capitol Building. A hearing in docket EL04-016 is scheduled to be held December 13th through the 16th, and meeting is adjourned.